Coming up on The Week in Geek, Amazon is raising its own minimum wage to $15 an hour and is also vowing to lobby to raise the national minimum wage. The move launches the company and CEO Jeff Bezos into the broader discussion over working wages, an issue Amazon has been criticized over in the past. Plus, we will take a look at Likewise, the new recommendation app hatched out of Bill Gates' private office. From GeekWire.com in Seattle, I'm editor Todd Bishop.
I'm civic innovation editor Monica Nicholsberg.
So Monica, we just had our big GeekWire summit. We've been talking about it for weeks. We're going to talk about it a little bit more later on. You got to do some great interviews. You talked to Tony West, the Uber chief legal officer, the general counsel.
I did. Yeah, it's all so fresh. I feel like we've been talking about the summit forever. I don't know if I'm ready to dive back in yet.
Yeah, we'll get to it later. We'll put it off for now. Okay. But let's start with what was the shocking news of the week. And I know we might call things surprising or shocking, but would you have ever expected to wake up on Tuesday morning to the news that Amazon was raising its own minimum wage to $15 an hour?
Definitely not. In fact, on Tuesday morning, I had an entirely different plan. It was the morning of the GeekWire Summit. I was going to get up and make some coffee and go over my questions and have this long, relaxed morning. Instead, I woke up to like 25 notifications from the team about this big news announcement from Amazon and had very conflicting emotions because on the one hand, raising wages for workers, I think we can all agree, is a great thing. And on the other hand, I was like, today, really?
Yeah, but I mean, come on, this was a huge news story. It was actually great. It gave us a really good hook to talk about in the opening session of our technology conference, the GeekWire Summit, which we're referencing over and over here.
But promoting it for next year already.
So this was merely the latest chapter in an evolution of this story that involved Jeff Bezos, Bernie Sanders, Amazon's trillion-dollar valuation, and Jeff Bezos' status as the world's richest person. All of these factors coming into play here. What are the basics of the story first?
Yeah, so the basics of the story involve Amazon's warehouse workers and growing body of reports of warehouse workers enduring some pretty strenuous conditions, tough deadlines and a lot of pressure from management reportedly, to the point where sometimes they didn't feel comfortable taking bathroom breaks. That's what some of these news stories said. And Bernie Sanders, who is a champion of economic justice, took this up and he actually introduced legislation called the Stop Bezos Act. And the idea would be to tax Amazon to cover the cost of federal assistance that some of its workers receive. And he said some very, very critical things about Amazon. It seems like that was at least part of what eventually led Amazon to make this decision, because Jeff Bezos then came out and said, you know, we've listened to the criticism and taken it to heart and we're going to make these changes.
And it was really fascinating for that reason. I think a lot of times in our country right now, people pick a position and then they defend it almost to the death in many cases. And I think people look at Amazon a lot of times as a company that might feel from the outside like it's this giant, intractable tech company that really just has its position and sticks to it. But here I think you see at least some flexibility on Amazon's part. And that's part of what was surprising on the surface. But then when you think about it, actually, the company is pretty logical a lot of times. And I think part of the logic here was the negative publicity was getting to be too much.
I think that's certainly part of it. And another part of it is we're seeing a really rapid shift in the way that this corporation behaves. I think the reason that it has this reputation, or historically had this reputation, of being, like you said, an intractable tech fortress was because it was very, very private in the beginning of the company. The first few years did not do a lot of interviews, a lot of PR, a lot of explaining itself, and at least didn't publicly show a big philanthropic appetite in the same way that some other companies do. Now we're seeing them get a lot more engaged on a lot of different issues. We just had Jeff Bezos come out with an announcement that he's going to start a $2 billion fund to support preschool education and homelessness nonprofits that help alleviate homelessness. And I just think it's part of this new era where some of it is strategic and it's response to a lot of criticism that Amazon's getting. And once you become the richest person ever in history, that's a different position in the world. You have to kind of step up. Otherwise, you're going to just be a punching bag.
The other thing that I think is coming into the mix here is the announcement that is slated to come by the end of the year, which is Amazon's HQ2, whichever community Amazon chooses in North America, they're going to be looking at this company and saying, is this a company we want in our midst? Obviously, the economic development leaders of whichever community that is will say yes because they want those jobs. But I think everybody else in that city is going to be saying, okay, what kind of corporate citizen are we going to be getting? And I think part of this is Amazon preempting potential criticism from its future neighbors in whatever city they choose for HQ2.
I think that's definitely true. And then there's also just a really logical recruiting element of this, which is we're going into the holiday shopping season and they need to bring on a lot of seasonal workers.
Okay. Now, that is the top line of the news. They're raising the minimum wage across the company to $15 an hour. Obviously, that applies more to people in their fulfillment centers, their distribution centers, even potentially other parts of their distribution network.
And Whole Foods employees.
And also, it's important to note, this applies to all full-time, part-time, and temporary workers, including those hired by third-party agencies. So that's actually pretty significant in terms of the scope of people. Amazon says it will impact more than 250,000 Amazon employees, as well as more than 100,000 seasonal employees, because keep in mind, Amazon's total workforce expands by a significant amount over the holidays as they're getting ready for the peak shopping season. But there's another side to this, because at the same time that Amazon is raising the minimum wage, they also are taking away the restricted stock units. In other words, some of these workers would receive stock awards as part of their compensation, and they're no longer going to be doing that. And also, they're taking out incentive-based bonus, performance-based bonuses. And so there was a bit of a secondary backlash about this announcement, because there was another side to it that was more negative. And in fact, some workers said they didn't like this.
That's right. Some workers did say they didn't like it. But when I spoke to Amazon, they said that they can guarantee that all workers in fulfillment centers will see their overall compensation increased. So there's a bit of a debate over whether removing these monthly incentive bonuses and restricted stock units is actually lowering their pay, although some workers have said that it will.
Right. And you would think that the company would know whether or not it will. And you have to look at that statement and say, well, does that apply to the entire employee base? Or are there some employees who might end up with less overall compensation? But it sounds like they're saying
they'll all be compensated more than they were before. And employees who make more than $15 an hour now will be getting $1 an hour raises, which is an increase, but there has been some feedback that that's not a dramatic increase.
And the company says that doing away with those kind of extra incentives and baking that into the actual hourly wage instead makes it more predictable. They don't have to wonder whether they're going to be getting that stock or that bonus. But the bigger picture here is Amazon really making a statement at the national level, and they said they will start lobbying Congress to raise the federal minimum wage. And now you have to really look at it closely. They're not saying they're going to lobby to raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. They're just saying they believe that the current federal minimum wage of $7.25 is too low.
Right. Yes. It's very interesting to see a corporation like Amazon that's very focused on its bottom line and efficiency and making the most out of the least is taking this very activist position. And I think that there is such a groundswell of support for this idea of raising wages. There's a lot of research to show that wages have not kept pace with really any of the other metrics of the things you need to live a dignified life, housing, healthcare, what have you. So on the one hand, it's interesting and controversial that they're taking this political position. But on the other hand, I think it isn't quite as controversial as some of the other things they could champion.
Now, the ultimate measure of whether this is significant or not actually is whether it's material to the company's financial results. And the last line in the FAQ on this signaled that it will be. They said that the additional expense will be incorporated into their earnings guidance. So that's where you look at it and go, okay, you can look at this statement that it's going to be a net benefit to the workers as legitimate because it's going to impact Amazon's bottom line.
Right. They're putting their money where their mouth is.
So that was a fascinating piece of news from one of the Seattle region's corporate giants. And a titan of the industry had another piece of news that was another big surprise. And we're going to be talking about that coming up next on The Week in Geek. Welcome back to The Week in Geek. It's Todd Bishop.
And Monica Nicholsberg.
Monica, I was at the GeekWire Summit, the running thread through this show, and I got a text message from a guy named Larry Cohen. Does that name sound familiar in the context of Microsoft to you at all?
Sort of. So
he was more of a behind-the-scenes figure at Microsoft for many years. He was the head of communications during the era when Bill Gates was, well, chief software architect and then ultimately chairman and moved on. But Larry Cohen went with Bill Gates to his private office, which is sort of a third place for Bill Gates. He's got the foundation, he's got his, obviously his home, and then he's got this private office that for many years has been called BGC3. They call it, they have some other name for it, but I always think of it in my head as Bill Gates Company 3.
And see, yeah, I don't know if that acronym really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly, which is why they just recently changed the name to Gates Ventures, by the way.
Okay, that's much better.
Just last week, in fact. So Larry texts me and says, hey, we got something cool to show you. Why don't you pop over to this hotel where we are a few blocks away from the summit in downtown Seattle? And I was like, oh, okay.
He lured you with ambiguity.
Yes, exactly. I was like, well, if it's Bill's guy, I'll go see what you got. So Nat Levy and I went over to the hotel and walked into the room there, the suite that they had. And I recognized the person that was with Larry when I walked in. And it was Ian Morris, who was a longtime Microsoft person who then went on to run the real estate company Market Leader before it was acquired by Trulia. So anyway, lots of tech history there in the room. And we were like, okay, guys, like, why are we here? What are you going to show us, you know, after the pleasantries? Because we had no idea. They are launching a new company backed by Bill Gates, and it's called Likewise.
Likewise.
Likewise, which I think it's a really clever name. It's two very positive words that come together, two syllables, and apparently they were able to get the domain name. You know, I'm sure they probably had to spend some money on it, but still, it is a recommendations app. So, do you ever have a situation where you're talking with a friend and they say, oh, you should really watch this show on Netflix, or I went to that restaurant, or, oh my gosh, you're going to Tokyo on a trip or wherever, you should go see these three places. The whole idea is to collect those recommendations of all sorts into one app and then let you follow your friends, keep your own lists, and basically interact around the things that you love and then find out about the things that your friends love. So I was kind of intrigued at first, and I've been using it a little bit. So the thing that hooked me on it was that it turns out, I didn't know this, but both Larry Cohen and Ian Morris are apparently big tennis players and tennis fans. And so Ian, when he first pulled out the app, just happened to be somebody who I have an affinity with because I love tennis. And the first thing that was there was a movie that I had never heard of. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to see that movie. It was Strokes of Genius, which is the Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal movie, which I didn't know about. And so like, I was like, okay, I can see the value of this, because had I been following you on Likewise, I would have been able to find out about this movie that I wouldn't have known about otherwise, simply because you and I have shared interests. So just by serendipity, my interaction with him immediately demonstrated the potential value of the app. Now, you could be really skeptical about this because there's all sorts of different ways that you could essentially share those kinds of recommendations, one of them being Facebook.
Sure.
So, but it's an interesting app on its face, but it's also really interesting because of the way it was created out of Bill Gates' private office. Larry Cohen, the longtime Microsoft communications chief, who's the CEO of Gates Ventures, longtime Bill Gates lieutenant, he basically just sort of had the idea. He realized he was having all these conversations with his friends, and that would come up a lot, you know, just like everybody does. And he didn't have a good way to store or keep track of all those recommendations. And so he took the idea to Bill Gates. And he said within 5 minutes, Bill Gates did his trademark thing whenever he's been presented with a good idea. Do you know what that is?
No, what is it?
He stands up. And starts talking. Like, that is the signal. If you are talking with Bill Gates and presenting him with a pitch or an idea, and if he stands up and gets excited, you know that he, at least, thinks you're onto something.
Interesting. I mean, I think that there's potential there. I was just thinking about my own behavior, and like, there is something powerful to be captured in recommendations from people you trust. Like, I use different apps for it right now. I on Spotify, I'll go to my friends' profiles to look at their playlists and what they're listening to, because I know that we have similar tastes in music. And on Facebook, I'll look at the events that they're attending. I keep a note in my phone for restaurants and movies and TV shows that are recommended to me. So I can actually, I tend to be pretty skeptical. I really don't like downloading new apps on my phone. It's just like too many apps. But I could get on board with this.
See, I end up slacking notes to myself. Do you know how you can go into Slack and make a note for yourself? I end up, or I text it to myself. And so I do think there's some validity to the notion that we're doing this anyway, but we're doing it in such haphazard ways that there's a good justification for centralizing it into one app. And if you can follow other people, so it's a Twitter follow model. So in other words, you don't have to be friends with them. So you can go in, and Bill Gates was one of the beta testers, and see like, hey, what museums would Bill Gates visit in the country? And maybe I could go check those out. And of course, it's very much in line with like Oprah's favorite things in that way, or Bill Gates's book recommendations. So it's kind of an outgrowth of that. The other crazy thing from a business standpoint is I was a little bit frustrated, frankly, with myself, because I asked Larry, how long have you guys been testing this? And he looked at me and he had like a gleam in his eye. And
like
he just started laughing, because he knew that he had been able to roll out the beta among his circle of tech people, who happen to be a lot of people that we interact with in the process of covering the industry. And we still hadn't found out about it because he had sworn them to secrecy. So I guess we know where everybody's loyalties lie.
High fidelity there. No, I mean, I'm thinking about it. And like, if this really caught on, imagine the world of likewise influencers. Like, you know, you think about Instagram influencers. What if you had thousands of followers, brands could get you to use their stuff? Like, there's something there.
So that is a great point. One of the things we talked about was, how are you going to make money on this? And they did the typical thing where they said they're not focusing on revenue right now. But they also did go a step further and say, but there's so many different ways to make money off of this model. One of them is the sheer amount of data that's being collected, or that will be collected, by people making recommendations to one or the other. The other thing is, say you are recommending a restaurant to somebody else. I mean, that restaurant would have a huge incentive to interact with you. And in that way, it's a lot like a more refined Foursquare. Do you remember Foursquare? It's still around.
I remember it.
Did you ever check in?
No, I never used it. But yeah, I mean, so you could do like an influencer model. You could do like more of a Groupon, like daily deals, if you're capturing people who seem interested in trying your service or whatever it might be. Or you could do ads. I mean, yeah.
So they were really cautious that they're trying it out. They're not making any big boasts about where they're going to take this company. That said, it's backed by Bill Gates. So clearly you have a large audience and a large amount of money to tap into there. They are, though, saying that they're going to seek other investors. And they're up to nearly 20 employees based in the WeWork in Bellevue.
Wow.
So this is an interesting company. It could flop. And I think there's a real case to be made that there's just not a need for one more recommendations app. But it could do well. And one of the other interesting things is, it's all recommendations, not ratings. And so if you think about the Yelp model, it's either glowing reviews, because people are motivated to go on and talk about something they love, or it's just a lot of negative stuff. And so they made a very purposeful decision to be constructive. And you don't put the things you hate in there. You put the things you love. And because of that, I think, especially in our climate right now, it's kind of an oasis in some ways.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of Yelp for that reason, because I don't know if I can really trust what I'm reading. It's either somebody who had an incredible or a horrible experience. And I kind of just want to know what my friends liked.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm using the app. I'm enjoying it. I'm fascinated by the story behind the company. It's really interesting that you've got Bill Gates here, somewhat inspiring, or at least endorsing this new consumer app and then funding it. And obviously, he's been involved in a variety of projects, both at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and then funding various things. There's an initiative that he's pushing called the Breakthrough Energy Initiative, Breakthrough Energy Ventures with other moguls. So he's involved in a bunch of different stuff. But to see him get behind a consumer-oriented app, it's pretty cool. Now, I will say, it's on iOS. and Android, and I was kind of teasing Larry. I said, what, did you go on Amazon Web Services too? I mean, you're just going to basically pick everything that's aligned against Microsoft. And he didn't like that. But at any rate, he said, no, they actually are basing the app on Microsoft Azure. So at least they're loyal in that regard. And to be fair, for better or worse, there really is no true mobile platform on a big scale from Windows at this point.
Right.
So in terms of smartphones, so sort of the reality of the situation there that Microsoft is dealing with. At any rate, that was Likewise. So if you want to check that out, it is currently available on both iOS and Android. And they're talking about in the future, it could be the type of data that could like inform a new AI assistant or something. So you could say like, hey, Likewise, tell me about this. What is Monica like this week on Netflix? And it would tell you that. So
the only thing I will say is when we're talking about them potentially monetizing the data, that hasn't been going that well for consumer apps. And I do have a little bit of hesitation, like using this thing that's very genuine, like the actual behaviors and interests of people and sharing them with their friends and using that for corporate insights feels a little bit scary in 2018.
You know what I need to do? I need to go look at the privacy policy and the terms of use to see what I'm getting myself into, actually. good point, Monica. I really appreciate that. But to be clear, they are not saying they're going to do that. They're just saying, hey, look, there's tons of potential out there to monetize this in a variety of ways, and they're not even thinking about it right now. Okay, so again, if you want to check that out, it is Likewise. We will be right back on The Week in Geek with The Random Channel. Welcome back. It is time for The Random Channel, that moment of the week where we talk about all the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg. What's on your mind, Monica?
Burgers.
Burgers. Really?
Yes, because on Saturday, Shake Shack is opening up in Seattle. This is the burger joint based in New York City, where I lived for 5 years. So I feel like, you know, they're kind of following me.
You're an expert.
Yes. And no, it's good. They make good burgers. They're sort of between like a gourmet burger and an In-N-Out. And they have a burger that they designed for Seattle specifically called the Montlake Double Cut. And it actually has kind of an interesting tech angle because the meat is from CrowdCow, the startup that sources sustainable beef and allows people to buy a cow together, basically.
It's like Kickstarter for cows.
Yeah, totally. But with a real emphasis on humanely raised, high-quality products.
Kickstarter for meat from cows, basically.
Yeah.
So they're supplying the meat for this Shake Shack burger. The
Montlake Double Cut. Because, you know, there's the Montlake Cut here in Seattle. Yeah, it's very cute.
Yeah.
And the bun is from Macrina Bakery, and it's Beecher's cheese, of course.
So this is their gimmick whenever they go into a new market, I presume, is they come up with a locally sourced burger.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, all I can think of, two words come to mind as I'm hearing you talk about these things.
What are they?
Krispy Kreme. This reminds me so much of Krispy Kreme.
Why?
As I see people talking about this Shake Shack thing, which I know nothing of, it reminds me of the phenomenon maybe 15 years ago when Krispy Kreme came to town and people were like lining up. And, you know, Krispy Kreme is still around, but I mean, it's a donut, people. It's a donut and it's a burger, Monica. Who cares?
Well, first of all, I thought Krispy Kreme was everywhere, so your reference is lost on me.
Okay.
But
just the places you've been, apparently. It's
California, Washington, New York.
Yeah, Shake Shack may be following you, but clearly you're following Krispy Kreme.
Wow. I've got to reflect on a lot here. No, it's just a good, I mean, I don't think it's like life-changing, but it's a good burger. I'm not going to go right away because I don't want to wait in the line. And even when I was in college, it was kind of like one of those things where it was almost not worth the line. It was in this park in New York, and the line would like wrap all the way down the block, but yeah, it's kind of fun.
So how would you compare it? Is it Dick's? Is it Burger Master? Is it McDonald's? Is it Burger King?
It's higher quality than any of those.
Red Robin?
Well, Red Robin's a sit-down place.
Well, sure, but I'm talking about the burger, not the experience.
I see. Okay. It's better than Red Robin.
Okay. Whoa. Because I like a Red Robin burger.
I'm not a huge fan.
Okay. All right. So, but better than Dick's, better than Red Robin, like the best? Is it the best burger you've ever had?
I don't know about that, but I would say it's the best of any at that like kind of price point, like burger stand.
Okay. Interesting. All right. You know, there was a famous Bill Gates quote about this, speaking of our prior segment.
You've got Bill Gates on the mind.
Bill Gates. Hey, man. Yeah. Hey.
Cover Microsoft for 20 years.
Exactly. He was at the University of Washington. I was covering this event. It was probably 10 years ago now, maybe less. And one of the students stood up and asked him what it was like at the time to be the world's richest person. And he thought for a second and he paused and he said, "It's the same burger," which I loved. You know, there's just some basic common denominators among all of us. And ultimately, it's the same burger. And, you know, Bill Gates is a big, big burger fan. You know, I think they might have purposefully located Microsoft near the Bellevue Burgermaster, the one that's right there on 520, right off of 520.
That's interesting because Shake Shack is right in Amazon's backyard. It's going into South Lake Union.
Interesting. Yeah, and to be clear, that was when they first moved back from, or they first moved from Albuquerque to the region. They were in Bellevue, and basically the Burgermaster was the equivalent of their cafeteria, and then they moved to Redmond. But, okay, so Shake Shack is in Amazon
territory. Yeah, which makes total sense. It's, you know, a trendy burger in the heart of Amazon land makes sense for Seattle.
Yeah, okay. Well, my random channel item, I do need to check out the Shake Shack.
No, but what's your random channel?
My random channel, the behind the scenes at the GeekWire Summit was especially fun this year. I got to hang out backstage with Reggie Fils-Aimé, the Nintendo of America president. It just a lot of fun. And he had like his Mario pin on, and Tim Ellis, one of our contributors who's on our show occasionally. Tim turned into a total fanboy. It was pretty fun. He went in there with his Nintendo Switch and had a pen ready for Reggie to sign in white silver. And Tim's got a good tweet out on that. We should link to that from the show notes to Tim's tweet with the picture. As I said, the Reginator met the Tim. So that was a lot of fun. You had a killer interview with Tony West, the Uber general counsel. You held his feet to the fire. Your last question was something along the lines of, why should anybody trust Uber anymore? It was so good, Monica. And people came up afterward when we were at the event, and he called it tough but fair. And those were the questions, and this was the sentiment from the attendees that I heard. Those were the questions that needed to be asked of Uber.
Thank you. Well, Tony was a great person to interview. You know, he's got a ton of experience. He worked in the Obama White House. And to be fair, he inherited many of the problems at Uber. But I also think it gave him an opportunity to do what much of the new leadership is doing now, which is taking responsibility, saying we're sorry, and saying give us another chance. And he definitely did that.
He sure did. So, in fact, next week on the podcast, on the GeekWire podcast, we will be sharing the full interview, Monica's interview with Tony West of Uber. So be sure to subscribe to the podcast at geekwire.com/podcast or your favorite podcast app to catch that discussion. Just all sorts of interesting discussions that I got to have. I got to talk to Sue Desmond-Hellman, the Gates Foundation CEO. They did a fascinating grant to an organization that's going to be studying different levels of economic mobility and how people move out of poverty or don't based on the specific neighborhoods they live in.
And it's pretty fascinating. Yeah, the organization is called Opportunity Insights, and they partnered with the U.S. Census to map down to really micro neighborhoods a child's chances of earning more than their parents did. And in the case of children growing up in poverty, their chances of moving out of poverty. In Seattle, for example, there are huge differences between neighborhoods that are just a mile or two apart that looking at them, you wouldn't know what was going on here. So it gives an opportunity for parents, especially parents with limited resources, to make decisions and for policymakers to support parents to move into neighborhoods where their kids have the best shot.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite discussions was with Jamie Siminoff, the CEO of Ring, the company that was acquired by Amazon. And in fact, he's got a great story because he was on Shark Tank at the very beginning of his company and got rejected, did not get a deal on Shark Tank, then, of course, went on to sell his company to Amazon after getting an investment from Richard Branson, and the company was valued at more than $1 billion. And the cool thing is he is going to be a guest shark on the new season of Shark Tank. So he's going back kind of triumphant, and I'm sure he's going to rub it in the face of Mark Cuban and Mr. Wonderful and others.
Wouldn't you?
Yes, absolutely. So tons of interesting stuff. And if you were not there, you can check out all the coverage on GeekWire. We have a special coverage section if you just search for that on the site. And be sure to have it on your radar for next year in early October. All right, that is the Random Channel, and that is the Week in Geek. Thank you very much for listening to GeekWire. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
Talk to you next time on The Week in Geek.